Before we get into whether J.B. Pritzker really likes puppies or loves puppies, or whether he eats puppies, laughing and snorting through his nose, chomping them down with Boss Madigan telling jokes about how the puppies are like Illinois taxpayers, and whether Willie Wilson's giveaway will do anything, and former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort. He's on trial, and there's that $15,000 ostrich jacket prosecutors talked about. Who wears an ostrich jacket? It sounds like something a Balkan pimp would wear in Taken 4. Oh, Manafort, you still look like a B-movie villain. And before we talk about how property taxes are due now and will break our back, and that killer tweet issued the other day by Kristen McQuarrie at Statehouse Chick, I've got something else to tell you about. There was this fly, and it was biting the hell out of my left, the calf part, that hairy short shank of Casso. And I was on deadline, damn it. And that fly, he was biting my leg good. The editors were waiting for a column. It was about the media not giving two figs about Trump supporters, shaming them, mocking them, rather than trying to understand 63 million people, most of whom don't really like my business. And so I'm trying to figure it out, thinking it through, worrying about the Republic when 63 million people are shamed and kicked to the margins. And for all my so-called deep thoughts, or at least I thought they were deep, writing here on the deck with the tomato garden on my right, there was something else. There was that damn fly. It wasn't a house fly. This was a meat biter, a bastard. I ran into the house, reached into the cabinet where Betty keeps the cleaning supplies. I was hoping there was some spray, some chemical, to ward him off me while I finished. I found furniture polish and green cleaning products, but no off. The clock was ticking. Trevor Jensen, my line editor, emailed me something like, "When?" "In a minute," I typed back. "In a minute." And that's when it bit me again. Every time I hashed out a sentence, I always agonize over the national column. It's the first one in the week, and I'm worried about what kind of reach it'll have and whether it'll be coherent or not. And this damn fly was biting my leg again, my right leg, again and again. Every time I turned, every time I got going writing, the fly was biting me. A few weeks ago, I finished binge-watching all of Breaking Bad. You know that show? It's a great show. And I still hate Skyler. Who doesn't hate her? But Walter White, the protagonist, the chemistry teacher turned meth cooker in Albuquerque, had a fly problem too. The fly was in his meth lab. He chased it for hours and hours, trying to slap it, falling down, trying to kill it, waiting for it. He was consumed by the fly. I went online to read about it, and somebody wrote, "The fly had become a symbol of the loss of control in Walt's life." Loss of control? That's garbage. A bunch of Hollywood scata if I ever heard it. I'm on deadline, damn it. And there can be no loss of control on deadline, fly or no fly. And this fly was no metaphor. It was biting Casso's leg, and I mean hard. So I waited. I let it eat of my flesh, and as it gorged, I reached down slowly, then with a flick, I slapped it to death, like some short-shanked Greek god, ending life on a whim. And then I lit a cigar and kept on typing. "You stupid fly, I imagine you kicking your last kick, shrieking, help me," as you flew through the air and landed on the deck. Feast for crows. Fly, I've got one question. Are you happy now? I'm John Cass, husband, father, syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And this is the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Okay, Okay, we're back on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus. John Cass and Jeff Carlin, the producer of Rokon's show with Anna DeVellantis on WGN. I'm sitting in the same spot where I killed that fly, out on the deck, looking out at the tomato garden. In a few minutes, I have to rush off downtown to Green City Market to meet Chef Carrie Nahabedian and other chefs, watching them buy produce for their restaurants. And then maybe slip over to the Cook County Treasurer's office and see what chaos, if any, Chicago mayoral candidate Willie Wilson has left. You might remember on the last podcast he said he would be giving out money to help people pay for their property taxes. And that Rahm protest blocking Lakeshore Drive and whether Rahm's going to back it or not or arrest black reverends when he didn't arrest the white priest that did the Dan Ryan protest. And all that's waiting for me, and the moots of the month is waiting for me, and all the other news buzzing and biting, aggravating your average American, who, according to a new study, spends 11 hours a day interacting with media. 11 hours a day? When do they work? Do they interact with the media while they're engaged, otherwise engaged in the washroom? To prove I don't have any stress while I'm juggling all that, I'm also waiting for University of Chicago professor, linguist Jerry Sadlock, a very nice guy. His study is an obscure Eskimo dialect, and I'm waiting for him to get back to me. I reached out to him to ask about that ridiculous, blasphemous survey that dares say Chicago accents are the most unattractive accent in the country. Jerry grew up on the South Side. He knows what a French room is. He knows the key to get into the car garage is called the garage key. I emailed the editors to tell them I've got dibs on that Chicago accent thing. Why not? In Chicago, how many columnists were actually born in Chicago? I think Mary Mitchell of the Sun-Times, me, a few others, Dan Michalopoulos of WBEZ, but not many. A tiny handful. They come from other places, born in other towns, went to nice schools, most of them, but were they born here? No. And then comes that study, saying that we in Chicago speak in a most unattractive manner. Unattractive? You fools? You simpering, superior, elitist fools? Our accent is unattractive? Well, how about this? Marie, throw me through the window my jacket, Marie. That's not attractive? That's not sexy? What the hell's wrong with you? We speak beautifully. Our vowels are honest, clear. Maybe the vowels are a little harsh and flat, but you know what? That's what we do. We speak Chicago. We are Chumbalo Nation. And we know what honesty sounds like.
From the windy city of Chicago. People here sure are friendly, but some have had a hard time understanding my accent. So I've been practicing how to talk like a true Chicagoan.
Switching to Geico could save you hundreds of dollars on car insurance. Die, bears.
You people sure do talk funny.
What you talking about? What you talking about?
Okay, what's with J.B. Pritzker? Democratic candidate for governor. Loyal readers know that I'm really not too crazy about what Bruce Rauner, the Republican, did to the Republican Party, but JB? Come on, man. The last time I really paid attention to him, when he was meeting secretly with black ministers after being embarrassed for mocking black politicians to Governor Deadmeat, you know, Blagojevich, on that FBI tape. And he's back with a vengeance now. He's got a commercial about puppies. Yeah. Have you seen it?
Mike Madigan hates puppies. Mike Madigan hates sunshine. J.B. Pritzker and Mike Madigan are Democrats, so J.B. Pritzker must hate puppies and sunshine.
It's ridiculous. Bruce Rauner is a failure, and he blames everyone but himself. As a businessman, I've helped create thousands of jobs by bringing people together to solve problems and get results. And that's what I'll do as governor. And for the record, I love puppies.
Mike Madigan hates puppies. Mike Madigan hates sunshine. J.B. Pritzker and Mike Madigan are Democrats. So J.B. Pritzker must hate puppies and sunshine. Really? Come on, J.B. Come on, J.B. I don't care if a dog licks your face. That's nice. Kristen McQueary, spiritual sister of this podcast, issued a killer tweet right when that J.B. Pritzker commercial was coming up. Here it is. Tomorrow, meaning this week, property taxes are due in Cook County. And at Truthin, crunch the numbers. How much is each Chicago taxpayer on the hook for regarding government debt? $126,360. Yeah, that's $50,400 to the state of Illinois. $45,000 to the city of Chicago. $11,000 to the county. $16,000 to Chicago Public Schools. $4,000 to CTA. $790 to the Park District, and $630 to the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, $860 to CHA. That's a lot of money you owe Chicago taxpayers. I remember when, years ago, I was on this kick about writing about per capita debt and spending. This is during the Daily years. Especially those last years when everything was out of control. Madigan and Daley, and they were all spending. And before that, Governor Thompson and Edgar wanted to spend. And, of course, George Ryan wanted to spend. And Big Bill Cellini, the boss of the Republican Party underneath the radar, you know, the one who handled all the pension deals, he liked the spending, too, because, you know, he was also chairman of the Road Builders Association. How you doing? And road builders like to get paid. That's why the roads are always being torn up, because road builders like getting paid. And I'm thinking, all that money, they could be going to real things, like cops, like paying teachers, and it's going to pensions. And the problem is, those pensions, if they don't get a new revenue stream, will dry up. Rahm says that he's closing the gap on the budget deficit in Chicago, but that's just creative accounting, because in a few years, if you look at the numbers, it'll balloon back up again, and by that time, he'll be president of the United States, or maybe director of the Bolshoi Ballet or something, and Chicago's going to get killed. And Chicago's too good of a town to get killed. The teachers who worked hard for their retirement are too good to get screwed. The cops, the firemen, all the public sector workers, I feel sorry for them too, and the taxpayers. Everybody's going to get screwed on this, because we've spent and spent and spent ourselves into oblivion. Chumbolo Nation, get out your checkbooks. Good government is good politics. At least that's what they kept telling us year after year. But then something happens. You know what happens? It breaks your back and leaves you on the side of the road along the Chicago way. And all the politicians drive back and forth off to their lake houses and their grand estates, and maybe drive to fine universities where they send their kids. And we all get to pay in Illinois. That's what we do. We doff our hats. We bend our knee. We think, oh my God, the great politician paid attention to me. He didn't hurt me. He looked at me. Keep paying, Chumbalones. All of us. Chumbalone Nation. We know what we're here for. To vote for them and to pay.
Welcome to the new variety. Sit and relax. I'm that song and dance phenomenon, Max. Let me sing for you, do my thing for you till they give me the axe. Here's the song I'm doing, gonna fill you in on tax. Tax is that familiar melody, simple and true. Hum it if you've earned a dollar or two. Bucks are being spent by the government for whatever they do. Anyone who works a living gives more than a few. So our schools can be their best. So our roads...
Can you hear the cardinals and the other birds in the background? It's odd, isn't it? Do a podcast from your backyard with birds singing, but I kind of like it. Gives me a chance to reflect on what I did. Every time I go to bed, I don't think of the great things I did. I think of the failures, the stupid things I did, things I didn't do well enough. And then about 3 o'clock in the morning, I fall asleep. No, actually, I don't have trouble sleeping, but I always go to bed thinking about, I guess, my regrets. And I try to analyze what I should have done better. My dad taught me this. He said, before you go to bed, think about the next day, what you're going to do, what you're not going to do. See it in your mind. He was a long time before Dr. Phil and all that self-help stuff on TV. But it worked. And this morning, I came out and I was thinking, did I do a decent job or a good enough job or the right job in writing about Trump and the media and the 63 million people that have been marginalized? You know, it might surprise you, at least it should surprise the left for all. I know I do make fun of them and I poke fun and I have some fun with it because I am a conservative floating on a sugar cookie in a sea of liberal milk, okay? It's just what it is. But I don't want the people on the left, like Bernie Sanders people, to be marginalized, kicked to the side of society, mocked and ridiculed. Stupid ideas, yes, we can mock stupid ideas. I guess you could mock the stupid idea of doing a podcast out with planes from Midway flying overhead. But I don't see people as idiots to be marginalized. Politicians, of course, make fun of them based on what we think. But not the people. And I think what media has forgotten in this hatred and resistance to Donald Trump is that there's 63 million people who voted for him. And every day you look in the newspapers or online or watch any of the other cable network news shows besides Fox, which I don't watch either. It's slavishly kisses Trump's butt all the time. But the other ones, they go the other way completely. And I have to say, sometimes I look in newspaper headlines and I read things like, the trouble with Trump, he's really stupid, and so are you. Or, Trump is a racist, and so are you. Or, Trump is a fool, and, you know, if you voted for him, you're a fool too. Or that Cory Booker thing. Remember Cory Booker? He's the senator from New Jersey. And he started talking about evil. He condemned Supreme Court nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh in biblical terms. He said, anyone who does not oppose his confirmation is complicit in evil. And Kavanaugh is a Catholic. He seems like a decent guy. Cory Booker might not want like his politics, if he has any. He was selected or nominated by Donald Trump, so clearly Cory Booker wants to run for president. And to do that, Cory Booker says, I'm here to call on folks to understand that in a moral moment, there is no neutral. In a moral moment, there is no bystanders. Check your grammar, Senator Booker, you need a copy editor. You are either complicit in the evil, or you are either contributing to the wrong, or you are fighting against it. And then he talked about the Psalm, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. It doesn't say that I sit in the valley of the shadow of death. It doesn't say I'm sitting on the sidelines in the shadow of death. It says I'm walking through the shadow of death. It says I am taking agency, that I'm going to make it through this crisis, Booker said. In Cory Booker's mind, he wants to be the next Barack Obama. He says people are evil. You are either complicit in the evil, or you are either contributing to the wrong, or you are fighting against it. Consider what that means. If you don't agree with me, Say you want, what, you're on the left, you want higher taxes and a $20, $15 minimum wage, you're evil? If you disagree with me on foreign policy, you're evil? If you disagree on the role of the executive and its relationship to the legislative branches, you're evil? Evil. That's called marginalizing people, Mr. Booker. He's not being really condemned for this. That's what worries me. Because every day I read things about how, you know, Trump is evil. Okay, say what you want. He's a big boy. He's the president of the United States. You criticize him all you want. My worry is the marginalization of 63 million people. If I read every day that they're stupid, they're racists, they don't understand, it's us versus them, on and on and on, a tribalism in the media is dangerous because they turn off. They turn us off. It bothers me because I have bills to pay and I love working. I like the newspaper. What bothers me even more so is that if we marginalize 63 million people and call them racists every day and call them stupid every day, call them easily biddable, fools, what happens is, well, what do you do when Trump is gone? If you get rid of Trump, if Paul Manafort does flip, if Robert Mueller does finally put a case together, because it's gone from Russian collusion to obstruction, now it's to conspiracy. The media narrative keeps changing every day. What if Trump is bounced? What do you do with those 63 million people who voted for him? After you've called them racists and xenophobes and deplorables, what do you do with them? Do you put them in railway cars and ship them off to a re-education camp where they can learn to love Barack Obama? Learn to love being called evil by Cory Booker? Learn to be mocked? Love to be mocked by pundits writing in either two fashions. One is juvenile Beavis and Butthead fashion, and the other is you're all a bunch of white racist fashion. I wonder what happens. It's not good for the Republic. You can't, what are you going to do? Are there racists among them? Sure. Sure there are. Racists among the Trump voters, just like they're racists among other candidates. Look, you vote for somebody because his skin is black and you, that's your only criterion, I think that's racism too. Okay? It could be called pride, depending on if you like the candidate and like the politics, but really, voting on skin pigment is not really that, I don't know. I don't see what Barack Obama did for Chicago. I'm still waiting. We're building him a temple. But the people are hurting, and they were hurting for years, and he never showed up. They'll build his golf course eventually. Yeah. They've delayed it for a while, so Rahm can't stand there at the podium and cut the ribbon and open it up for his re-election. But the larger issue is whether on the left or the right, criticizing the candidates and the politicians, that's fine. But there's this sense I get that journalism is so upset that people didn't listen to them about Hillary Clinton, didn't see her virtues, didn't understand her goodness. And when they voted against their choice, they became unhinged. And they became, I have to say, rather, if not hateful, dismissive. You kick people to the margins, people that have lost their jobs years ago, people, all they want to do is work. They want to protect their families. That's what they want. They don't, you know what? They're not interested in the punditry. When I saw Bill Clinton being supported and drove me insane, I thought, this guy's a scumbag. Grabs women. He does all this stuff in the White House. A man of no character. I sounded just like those on the other side today. I guess you learn things as you get older, right? And a wise managing editor pulled me aside and said, you know what, I know you can't stand Clinton, but do you understand that people have money in their pocket? People vote on their wallets, man. The guy's working. He's got a few extra bucks to spend. Buy his lady some flowers. Buy a drink. Take his kids to Wisconsin Dells. That's what people want. They don't care about all this other stuff. And I think sometimes in my business, we get too wrapped up in thinking about our own little policy fights with each other and making victims or enemies out of people that disagree with us, calling them evil. Evil, Senator Booker. Evil. You are either complicit in evil, or you are contributing to the wrong, or you are fighting against it. Wow. It's politics, man. This is not the last battle. It's just politics. And kicking 63 million people to the curb constantly, every day, in media, because you don't like the guy they voted for, is a dangerous proposition. Because they're not being exiled. They're not going anywhere. They're your next door neighbors. They're your cousins. They're people that live in some other neighborhood. They're your countrymen and women. And this business of calling people evil because you don't agree with them, it's wrong. This is John Cass. Why do I say for John Cass? For Jeff Carlin, WGN AM, producer of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis. And someday he'll come out here to the tomato garden. Probably the tomatoes have to be ripe. I've got a few, but they're not, you know, I put them in late, Jeff. And me, John Cass. Remember, find us on iTunes, Google Play, anywhere you can find us. Write us a great review or go to WGN Plus. You'll find this podcast. It's growing every week. We've got the best podcast in the city of Chicago. And this has been The Chicago Way.